the James Suckling Podcast. Wine ratings, reports, interviews, and more.
Good morning, gentlemen.
How are you guys?
Very good. Enjoying winter here in Chile.
Oh my God, I forgot, of course. Yeah, we're just getting to the end of the summer. So listen, just to get straight, by the way, I'm not really tasting, I'm actually drinking it. It's 8:30 right now. I have a nice steak at home and I decided that I like it so much that I'll actually drink some of this. It's a beautiful second wine. And I honestly, I guess one question is, how did you finally decide to do a second wine and why? Like, tell me about it. It's a very delicious wine.
Basically, first of all, you know that I've been in the wine industry for a couple of years, so just fourth generation. So, and as a generation that has been involved in the wine business for such a long time, you know that building a brand is not something that you do from one day to the other. So it's something that takes time. And with the next vintage, with the launch of the 2020, you know that Almaviva is going to achieve the 25th anniversary next year. And after 25 years, we definitely believe that we had already a brand recognition, brand awareness that Almaviva was already known, was recognized because of the quality of the wine and because of its reputation. So we decided to launch Cepu through La Place de Bordeaux, because it's extremely important. Yeah. We're going to launch through La Place de Bordeaux. And in the past, we've done Epu, as you know. I know that you've tasted here once or twice when you came to Chile. So,
17 and 18, exactly.
Exactly, yes. So, but basically what has happened is that initially the 2001 were the first two vintages of Epu.
Finally, I didn't realize.
From a business standpoint, the decision was, let's focus on Almaviva, and please, I will always thank the manager that was in charge of Almaviva at the time, because we decided to focus on Almaviva. And then afterwards, we restarted again in 2006, but we basically only two markets. So to sell at the winery, so basically for the visitors that could buy at the winery. Then afterwards, it grew a little bit only for Chilean market. And only in the recent years, we had a little bit going to Brazil. But basically, Epu was focused and was dedicated exclusively to these two markets. Now, after enough time, and I'll pass the word to Michel to explain from a technical standpoint. But after all this time, that we believe that Almaviva has established itself, has positioned itself as one of the greatest wines of the world.
I have your first wine and your second wine.
Oh well, I believe that you are enjoying. For us, it's a 30
they're actually
morning,
open.
So a bit
they're
early.
They're open. So,
but we're envy.
How do you make the selection? Is it young? I'm sure you've told me before, in Chile, but is it young vines, or is it more by parcels, or is it a combination?
First of all, your epoch comes from the same. Same vineyard, same exceptional vineyard of Almaviva in Puente Alto, which is considered as one of the best areas in Chile and also in the road to grow Cabernet Sauvignon, which is the predominant variety of the wine. Like Almaviva, it's a Bordeaux blend, which is produced with the same dedication, the same care, the same level of details that we use to produce Almaviva. Obviously, the oldest vineyard that we have in Almaviva, which is over 40 years old, is mainly used for the first wine, for Almaviva. While a part of younger vines, but which were planted in 2002, 2003, which are now 18, 20 years, are also used to produce Almaviva. But there is a part of it which is also used to produce Epu, and also the longest vines between 5 to 10 years. So globally, we use younger vines. As an average, we speak of about 12 years old compared to 25 years for the first wine, the Antel Maiva. But there is a part of the vineyard which is located more in the north, which is slightly a bit cooler, which is slightly with deeper soils that we use preferentially for Epu. So that means a grape that will try to harvest a bit earlier to keep fruit, to keep freshness, to finally have a bit more verticality in the wine, a bit more tension. So if we look a bit at the history of the wine, because it's quite interesting to see what we produce now compared to what we used to produce. I think that although Epu is sharing lots of characteristics of the terroir of Almaiva, it has today its own personality. It has not been always the case as its composition has been a bit more variable. For example, in 2009, I remember that we had only 53% of Cabernet Sauvignon. But with the new plantation that we had this last 10 years, we have been able to go to the more precise definition of Epu, with today, since 2017, 2016, mm-hmm. I would say the predominant Cabernet Sauvignon with 80 to 85% of the blend, with some Carmenere, which is more 10, 12% of the blend, and a small percentage of Merlot and Cabernet Franc. So probably a deficient, the wine a bit more vertical with more Cabernet Sauvignon than what we have in Maillot.
So it's Cabernet Sauvignon, Carmenere, with a drop of Merlot and Petit Verdot?
And with a drop of Merlot and Cabernet Franc for the moment, maybe a bit of Petit Verdot when we'll have a bit more in the vineyard. We planted some last year, but today most of the Petit Verdot is used for
Merlot. I think it's very obvious that with the second wine compared to the Almaviva has a much more intense tannins. Like an interesting, really fine tannins Almaviva, and not aggressive at all. You can easily, you know, that's easy to drink now, but it's going to age incredibly well because it's so balanced. But the Epu, it focuses a little bit more on balance and fruit, transparency, and not super intense tannins. And you can just see that. And it's much more drinkable than the Almaviva. I guess that's really what you're looking for. What I like is there, you can see the character of Maipo, interestingly, in a way, I almost find the Epu much, you know, very typical for reds from Maipo, from Chile, while the Almaviva has just incredible length and structure. So, I find that it's really exciting. It's not like some second wines around the world where it's sort of a first wine that sort of doesn't have the intensity. Like you said, it has its own character.
Yeah, there is a bit more, I would say, more creaminess, more depth, more complexity in Almaviva.
Yeah, and, totally.
Yeah, a little smoother. The tannins which come from in a certain way the younger vines are not so well coated like in Almaiva, which give a bit more tension, a bit more verticality. But we have a precise aromatic profile, which is clearly the Puente Alto one, clearly the maple profile with cassis, black currants. Which are probably a bit more dominant. Where in Almaiva we have probably different layers that we can discover when the wine is started to open.
It's really more like Almaviva is more au couture, and then Epu is more, you know, prêt-à-porter.
Well, it has to be. It has to be the entry door to the Almaviva world. It has to be a wine that makes you dream of Almaviva. You know that I believe that in the past there was this sort of a second wine that was kind of a selection wine. In this case, you see that Michel has been putting a clear vision, and in my opinion, 17, 18, and 19, so that path that Michel had decided to establish. And so it's a second wine with its own character, but at the same time, it's a second wine that makes you dream of the Grand Vin. We can use the word in French.
So what is the name Epu? How did that originate?
So Epu is in the Mapuche language, which is one of the traditional civilizations here in Chile. Yeah. It means number two.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that.
And it's quite interesting. And you know the story of Almaviva. So Almaviva is this profound alliance between two historical wine families, like Baron Philippe de Rothschild, founded in 1853, and Concha y Toro, founded in 1883. And at the same time, it's also the encounter of two worlds. So Chile, that brings its terroir, its vineyards, its concentration, its character. And at the same time, you have the savoir-faire that's brought by the French with winemaking, with the I would even say a little bit before that, with the follow-up of the vineyards, date of harvest and winemaking, aging, and of course commercial part as well, which connects with the Epu going through La Passe de Bordeaux. You know that Almaviva has a combination with Almaviva, Count of Almaviva, very historical character from the weddings of Figaro, and you have the Tupon in the case of Almaviva, which is a symbol that has kind of shows the cosmic vision of the Mapuche. Well, in the case of the Epu, so you have Epu, which is the Mapuche language, and then afterwards you have a Tupu, which is I believe that word is Bosch, is a pin in English, that is used, and it also expresses the vision of the cosmic vision of in this case goes from the Mapuche up to the Incas. So it's a little bit wider, but anyway, so it expresses that combination, that encounter between the two worlds, which are clearly expressed as well in the label.
And what do you think? So are you, Michel, are you really happy where the wine is now? Where, like I said, it really, and like you said also, you taste it, it has its unique personality. Is that, you know, every year, is that where you want to be?
As you mentioned, Pion waited quite a long time to put it in the Palace of Bordeaux, is because we wanted to make it better, more defined, more precise, with its own character. We think that we have reached a certain level with a clear definition, but of course, when we will advance in time, we'll probably have an average age of vines involved in Epu that will be higher. So clearly a bit more complexity. We started to use a bit in 2020 a bit of new barrels, because so far it was only used barrels with an Almaviva. Uh-huh. So we started to use 10-15%. So we'll clearly have a bit more complexity and probably work with a longer time of aging. But at least at the level of the composition and origin, we are quite happy with what we reach in terms of style and character.
And also 19, maybe you could describe a little bit the vintage as well. It was an excellent year in Chile. I have a slight preference for 18. But you've had three excellent vintages in a row, 17, 18, and 19. Describe the vintages, but before I forget, Manuel, will you release any older vintages of this wine in the Place de Bordeaux?
So before Michel goes into the explanation of 19, which is going to be very precise, I know Michel, so it's going to be very in detail. What we're going to do, James, we have kept a few bottles of 17, 18. We've done that. We don't have many bottles from the previous vintages, but 17, 18, and on top of that, I believe, as Michel was saying, we have achieved the character, the personality, the style. So, some time ago, I decided with Michel and Felipe, we decided, well, why don't we keep a few cases here just in case there is the possibility there's some client that may be interested. Because you know it's important when you release a wine from time to time, like an explosion, and then you know it's not always followed up. But I wanted to keep those bottles to prove, to show the work that Michel has been doing. Of course, the exceptional terroir that we have, and this interpretation of Michel, which is extremely respectful. So yes, we've kept a few, and hopefully we'll be able to send some to the market upon demand.
Good. Good. Okay, and how about the lowdown on the 19 vintage Michel? What idea?
As a reminder, John, just for comparison, you know, 2017 was a very, very warm and very dry vintage with very low yields, you know, very early vintage. 2018 and 2019 were very similar in terms of climatic conditions, especially during the growing season, the harvest and ripening time, but very different in winter. Very different, as we had only 150 millimeter of rainfall between May and October for the vintage 2019, while we had 300 millimeter in for the vintage 2018. Ah, normally it's about 280. So it was a very dry vintage. So we started with very low hydric reserve in 2018, which is the main difference with 2018. Then I would say that we had, of course, to be very careful with irrigations, and we started to add water in winter, which is not already the case, and to be very precise on that point during the whole grain season. Bud break was a bit late. It started about 1 to 2 weeks later than usual. Spring was still very dry, drier than 2018. We had only 11 millimeter in spring for 2019, when we had about 50 for 2018, so a bit different. And then summer was very warm. Both vintage were very warm. Globally, if you look at the sum of temperatures between October and 10 March, 2018 was a bit cooler. But if you add April, it's almost the same, because if summer was very similar, very warm, your April was cooler for the vintage 2019, which has been very important finally. And as you know, the last 40 days before harvest are always very important all over the world. And finally, although we thought at the beginning that the harvest would be a bit later than usual, it finally started 1 week earlier than usual for the young vines of Merlot and Cabernet Sauvignon. But then, as the temperature started to go down at mid-April, which is quite common in this part of Maipo Valley, close to the Andes that refreshed the bottom of the valley, we had these lower temperatures that make that finally we're able to harvest the old vines of Cabernet Sauvignon almost as normal time. To keep finally a good freshness and to have a good freshness and ripeness at the same time. And then the and then the Carmenere were finally harvested at the end of May at normal time. So a very long harvest over a long period of 10 weeks. If I had to compare 2019, I would say that probably 2018 is the closest vintage I would find.
And what's going to happen with 2020, just as a preview for next year?
Extremely dry, because if 2019 was dry with 150 millimeter of rainfall, 2020 was 65 millimeter of rainfall. Wow. As dry as what we had in 99. A very, very early vintage, not so low yields as 2017, quite normal and a bit low, but not as low as 2017. And finally, we had we have probably a bit more opulence, very round tannins, but a very interesting vintage, 2020. I think that we are still lucky because 2020, although we had these complicated conditions.
But are you excited about the 20 quality? Do you think you could have something like 17? I'm really looking forward to trying it next year.
It has not the same. I think that the tannins of 2017 were quite present. 2020, it is rounder, is more approachable at this level. This silkiness in the tannins, since quite a long time. So it's a very fine, elegant, and complex vintage. No, I think that you will enjoy it. Yeah,
I think that sometimes people forget about Chile, how you really see the differences in vintages, and it's very much like being in France, and if you will, Bordeaux, where you can read the differences. And if you, that's what I really enjoy about Chile, is there's real connoisseurship with the top wines, that people have to understand that.
That's true, but we have differences which are probably not connected to the rain that we might have during the harvest, but more connected to the quantity of rota that we have in winter as a hydric resource.
Cool.
And also the temperatures. The temperatures that can be very different. And with a big change of temperatures in April, in our case, that makes the last 40 days very different than what we can have before. Which is very exciting, interesting to get at the same time freshness and ripeness. Ripeness because we can wait the time we want, and freshness because of this refreshing effect of the proximity of the Andes that bring these cold winds from the Cajon del Maipo, from the canyon of Maipo to the bottom of the valley, and that will generate this big difference of temperature between day and night, about 20 degrees Celsius always.
And you see that where you have the ripeness, but then the freshness at the same time, and the wines aren't heavy in any way. That's what's so unique about it, about great Chilean wines. And you guys really do that well. Manuel, tell me I don't know if you've talked about prices with that Poo, I guess it'll be substantially less than the Grand Vin, the Alma Viva.
James, right now, this is like the 40 last days of ripeness. For Michel, it's the 40 last days of price definition. But there are a couple of things that I believe that we've worked with Michel since the beginning. Once is the volume that we're going to make out of Apple, which is roughly one third of Alma Viva. We want the focus to continue being in Alma Viva. You know, it's like the Grand Vin of Mouton Rochil. So it's one third roughly. And it's the same concept. We are within the same chateau concept. So it's roughly one third. And the pricing is going to be one third as well. The only thing that I cannot tell you yet, because there are still some conversations going on. And since the release is going to be the 8th of September, we are still on the fine tuning of pricing of Alma Viva. We followed up very closely what has happened in Bordeaux. But, you know, there's a lot of difference with the Premier Grand Cru, Deuxième Cru, etc. Because
of course,
the price elasticity is completely different, but so we'll have to within the next couple of weeks we're going to continue working on pricing. But roughly, what I can assure you is that of course the volume is going to be one third of Alma Viva, and the pricing is going to be roughly one third of Alma Viva as well.
Well, listen, thanks so much for the conversation, and it's also great. Normally I'd be tasting, but it's almost 9 o'clock tonight. So I'm enjoying the Epu tonight. I have to finish dinner now. And that's only the proof that the wine's really so delicious. And as you described it, it has really beautiful fruit, tannins are bien fondu. And then I like the freshness. And that's really the sign of excellent Chilean wines, as you describe this unique terroir and unique climate that really gives you that. And so I'm excited that it's selling surplus, and also that it'll be better distributed globally. So congratulations and well done. And we look forward to seeing you guys, I hope, next year in Chile, and look forward to trying the 2020.
So we miss you.
My best.
You know that.
Yeah. Nos vemos, hermanos.
Cheers. Thank you.
Thank you, James.
Cheers. Bye-bye.